So the Gemara is on the coattails, Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, on the coattails of Yud Amud Beis. So on Yud Amud Beis, what the Gemara was doing was starting with a statement that was Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So it's a little bit higher than the middle. So what exactly did Rav Yehuda say in the name of Shmuel? Mutalishan Bekila Basukah, one's allowed to sleep in what's called a kila in a sukkah. We don't know at that point exactly what a kila entails. But with this type of bed, which is referred to as a kila, one is allowed to sleep in it in a sukkah. Af al pi sheyesh lo gag, even though it has a roof, has a canopy. V'hu she'en gavaya asara, provided that it's not 10 tefachim high. And that's how the Gemara began. And when all the dust settles, what exactly does the Gemara say? That all of this bed stuff depends. If it's got a roof, and the roof is a fixed type of roof, so even less than 10 tefachim is a problem, right? At the end of the day. If it's fixed in place, this canopy is like part of, built into the bed. It's like really, it's not like a folding thing. It's not the thing that you take on and off all the time. It's a fixed part of the bed. So then that's a problem, even if it's less than 10 tefachim. It's like being in a tent inside your sukkah. Less than 10 tefachim, because it's kaviya, if you remember that lashon. It's fixed. If it's not kaviya, so then it's only a problem. Sounds like if it's more than 10 tefachim high. So, and Shmuel says you're allowed to sleep in a kila in a sukkah, even with a canopy, as long as it's less than 10 tefachim. So apparently, we don't care that it has a canopy as long as it's less than 10 tefachim high. Unless it is kaviya. If it's fixed, it's really a permanent structure, you have a problem. So a kila apparently is a type of thing that you can take this canopy on and off at will. It's not really a fixed part, it's not always there. But if you had the type of bed that really is a canopy that's a permanent part of that structure, okay, so even less than 10 tefachim is a problem. And that's what the previous Gemara said. And then we got involved with this idea that you can, if it's less than 10 tefachim, so then it's like a piece of clothing. And that's what we spoke about last time, if you remember. Today we're going to try to tie all this Gemara into Hilchos Tzitzis, because that's where we're supposed to start today, Hilchos Tzitzis. We got to tie it into Hilchos Tzitzis. You ready? You think we can do it? Amiel, yeah? Say, yeah, of course we can. Did I tell you the story of Shul Salanter when the guys tricked him? No? My favorite Shul Salanter stories. Shul Salanter started this, he was the force behind what we call today the Musar movement. So he was trying to convince everybody to learn Musar. In those days, basically you had these Talmidei Chachamim, and a person who was smart enough, intelligent enough, academic enough to be a Talmid Chacham was in the yeshiva. And they were very intelligent, very intellectual. And eventually that became a problem with like the Haskalah and all these kinds of things, you know, people studying all kinds of philosophy and whatnot. But those types of people were not generally studying Mesilas Yesharim or Derech Hashem or any of those types of things, because that was like, you know, we learn Gemara, you know, we're high-level intellectuals. So that meant that the people that were in the yeshivas didn't necessarily have the greatest of midos and then weren't necessarily working on themselves in that way as much. Not as a rule, but in general. So Rishon Salanter felt that it was very important to get the message across that those types of people, that you have to learn Musar. You have to be working on yourself. There's no such thing, legitimately, as a Talmud Chacham who's not also a Tzaddik. It doesn't make sense. It can't be. So how do you convince people? So a guy that's a real Baal Musar goes into one of these places, and they look down on the guy, because the guy is very nice. He learns a lot of Musar. He's not a learned Gemara. But he's a nice Tzaddik. He's a good guy. We're not going to listen to him. We know way more than him. Arrogance. Okay? That's the way it was. So what he would do was, he was a Shul Salanter, he was a Baki in Shas. And so he would go into the yeshivas, and he would give a knock your socks off shir, showing that he had his fingertips on all the Shas. And then after he was finished the shir, and everybody was blown away, literally blown away, that's what happened. So then he would tell them how critical it is to learn Musar, and then so when they understood that this is a person who really knew what he's talking about, it's one of the Gedolei Ador. So okay, so then that message meant something to them. So he walked into a certain yeshiva, I don't know what yeshiva it was, and he'd put on the bulletin board his list of Marim Makomos, this is what the shir is going to be on. And he left, and the shir was done a week later, whatever it was. But that way they would be able to prepare the Marim Makomos to be able to be holding for the shir and ask him all kinds of kashas, so they should look smart, you know how it goes. So he comes back, and the bulletin board, the list of Mari Makomos, is not the Mari Makomos he put up. So like, you know, the funny guys, you know, in the yeshiva, they took it down right away and replaced it with random Mari Makomos all over Shas.
So he takes this piece of paper and he walks up to the podium and he's going to speak from the shtender in front of the yeshiva. And apparently, this is what he told the Talmidim later on, is that he stood there for a couple of minutes before he started the shiur, silently. And everyone's kind of like, oh. And then eventually, okay, he gave the shiur. Tying every single one of these marmakomos that had nothing to do with each other, tying them all into each other, knock your socks off, shiur, and then he started talking to him about how important his tefillin was. So everybody was talking about his shiur afterwards, and they're like, wow, that was, like, you know, that was really cool. I didn't think he would really be able to tie all those things together. He really does amazing. So the jokers that changed my coma said, you guys have no idea how amazing that was. Like, what do you mean? Those weren't his marmakoma. No way, for real? Yeah. Wow, that guy's really impressed. Okay, very nice. Fast forward, you know, somehow the Talmidim found out about this years later. And they asked Rabbi Sal Salanter, seriously, you were able to do that in like the 2 minutes that you stood there, just like going over the marmakoma, you were able to tie them all together? Like, that's really impressive. He's like, honestly, I could have just talked it through and tied all those things together on the spot. I didn't. That was not what I was doing in the 2 minutes. What were you doing? I didn't want to give the shiur. Because I knew that if I gave the shiur and I tied all those marmakomas together, I would feel good about it. And I didn't want to have that experience of gaiva. It's the opposite of what I stand for. So I didn't want to do it. And I was about to just walk out of the yeshiva and not give the shiur. Because it's more important to me to be a mensch than to give a shiur. It's not about me. It's not about arrogance. It's not about, oh wow, you can give the shiur. The whole point of the shiur was to give musr, that they should be, that the world should learn musr. So I didn't want to give the shiur. But I said to myself, if I don't, who is? Who's going to give this message? Who's ever going to get this across? What's going to be with musr? What's going to be with all the talmidim of this yeshiva? I said, I should give the shiur. I said, but I can't. I said, but I should. But I can't. But I should. So I fought with myself for those few minutes until I decided that I'm willing to sacrifice myself and I will do whatever I need to do after I give this shiur to work on myself that I shouldn't feel that way. But it's more important that they get the message of Musar. That's what he did in those 2 minutes. But in any case, so the Gemara starts off with a certain statement of Shmuel. And then the Gemara says, Lishna Harina, right? So two lines down, Yud Aleph and Aleph. There's another angle in the Masorah about what exactly Shmuel said. Amri lo, Amri Rav, some say, Amri Rav Huda Amar Shmuel. The Rav Huda said Amar Shmuel the following. Not number one. That's what we started with. He said number two, Mutter Lishan Bekilas Chasanim. It's permitted to sleep in what's called a Kilas Chasanim. So we spoke about a Kila. A Kila apparently is a type of bed that, okay, maybe it has a roof, but it's less than 10 tefachim high, and it's not kaviya, it's not fixed. What's a kilas chasanim? Sounds like it's, you know, some kind of canopy bed for a chasam. So we don't know exactly what that is yet, but it's permissible to sleep in a kilas chasanim basuka, lefi, because she'ein la gag, it doesn't have a roof. What does that mean? It doesn't have a roof? It means it doesn't have a tefach. It doesn't have a flat area of a tefach that's called a gag. It doesn't have a gag. Af al pi shegavaya asara, even though it's 10 tefachim high. Okay, so hold on a second. Sounds like a contradiction in Shmuel, right? A totally different approach. Because the first one is saying that you're allowed to sleep in a kila and a sukkah even with a gag, as long as it's less than 10 tefachim. But if it's more than 10 tefachim, then even if it doesn't have a gag, it's a problem. If it's more than 10 tefachim, even if it doesn't have a tefach, it's a problem. 10 tefachim is a problem. If it's less than 10 tefachim, then it has to be kaviyah. And it has to have a roof. Good? Now Shmuel is saying, you're allowed to sleep in a kilas chasanim because it has no gag, even if it's more than 10 tefachim. What? That's a contradiction. Shmuel said that if it's more than 10 tefachim, even without a gag, it's a problem. So what's going on? Okay, so but this is a Lishna Harina. This is another version that we heard we have from Shmuel. Meisive. So ask a kasha. Hayashen bekila basuka. A person who sleeps in a kila. It doesn't say kila's chasan. It says a regular kila. A person who sleeps in a kila and a sukkah. Lo yotze yerechai vasai. He's not yotze. Can't sleep in a kila and a sukkah. Shmuel says you can sleep in a kila's chasan and a sukkah. And we have a brisa or whatever that says you can't sleep in a kila and a sukkah. You're not yotze. So a contradiction. Here, what are we dealing with? Desheyesh lagak. And it does have a roof. If it has a roof, then you can't sleep in it. If it doesn't have a roof, well, that's what Shmuel's talking about.
Shmuel said, you're allowed to sleep in Kilas Chasana because it has no gag.
So far, it sounds like, according to this new approach, that the only problem of sleeping in a canopy bed or a tent or whatever in a sukkah is only when it has a roof. If it has no roof, it sounds like it could be as high as you want. Good? Tashma, come in here, another problem. Naklitin, a bed that has these two posts. Shnayim, two posts. So that's going to be one of these triangle beds, like the military tents. Naklitin, shnayim. The kinoifos, the bed that's referred to as a kinoif. Arbo, that has four posts. Okay, so what? Pires al gabi kinoifos. If you spread a canopy on top of the kinoifos, which is four posts, now you have a roof. Psula, that's no good. Al gabi naklitin, but if you spread your canopy on top of the two posts, so it's a triangle, kshera, then it's kasher. Ubilvad, provided that only if shalayu naklitin gavoyen minamita asara tvachim, that the posts are not higher than the bed 10 tvachim. In other words, if the bed posts are higher than 10 tvachim, then even the naklitin are problematic. So what does this mean? It means you don't have a roof. You just have two bed posts, so it's a triangle. If they're less than 10 tvachim, good to go. Higher than 10 tvachim, no good. Compare that to Shmuel.
Shmuel said, has no gag. Even higher than 10 tvachim is fine.
Well, that's against the Braisa. The Braisa says it has to be less than 10 tvachim. More than 10 tvachim, even without a roof, is a problem. What do you do with that? Ha gavoyan min amita asara. So the Gemara says, there, ha, you see from here, if there are gavoyan higher min amita from the bed asara, 10 tvachim, psula. Af al pisha ain la gag, even though it doesn't have a roof. That's just like we're spelling out the question on Shmuel. We're answers. Shani naklitin. Naklitin are different to kivye, because they're fixed. So again, so now what comes out of this stage in the Gemara is that if you have fixed bedposts, even without a roof, then more than 10 tvachim is a problem. Less than 10 tvachim is okay, because there's no roof. Which? If it's higher than 10 tvachim?
Yeah, there's no gag, there's no actual roof, it's just two bedposts.
Because apparently 10 tvachim is an area that's like used in Kol HaTorah Kula to be its own rishus. So 10 tvachim has a very serious chashivus of rishus on its own. That's what it sounds like. That would be my guess. So, but the Gemara's distinction is, it depends, that if you have akilas chasanim, apparently akilas chasanim is a type of bed that you can take apart very easily. It's not kaviya, it's not very fixed. So because of that, if it's higher than 10 tvachim, because it has no roof, then that's fine. That's not chashuv enough. But if it's a bed that really is a fixed bedposts, naklitin, where it says, are fixed, so then you have a problem. They have to be less than 10. Higher than 10, it's a problem because they're kaviyei. Gemara asks, I kaviyei, if they're fixed, lehavi ki kinoifois, then it should be no different than the kinoif, which you said is the four-post bed. Lagabe kinoifos. Okay, so the Gemara doesn't explain the kasha. The kasha is on the page before. If you remember, the page before, the Gemara said the kinoifos are kaviya. And therefore, even less than 10 tfachim, if it has a roof and it's kaviya, it's fixed, that's a problem. So, what do you have?
So, if there's a gag, that's called a kinoif. A kinoif has a gag because it's a four-post bed. And it's a canopy. So it's because it has a gag, that's the four posts, so then even less than 10 is a problem because it's called kaviyah. But theoretically, you could have a post, you could have a roof, but it's not kaviyah, and then less than 10 is okay. Yeah? So there are two issues we're dealing with. One issue is, it doesn't have a roof, and one issue is it has a roof. If it has a roof, then it's only a problem if it's kaviyah, under 10 tvachim. If it's more than 10 tvachim, then we don't care about roofs anymore, we don't care about anything. 10 tvachim is a problem. That's what we thought.
Then all of a sudden comes along Shmuel, and the Gemara says, oh, it seems that a kinoif is a problem. It has to be less than 10 tvachim. And Shmuel is allowing it higher than 10 tvachim. So we make a distinction. And we say, you're right, you have to say that a kinoif, which is only two posts, there's no real roof, is 10 tvachim. Okay, so 10 tvachim seems like it should have been a problem for everything. Like Menachem said, 10 tvachim is just like chashivus, it's a domain. So Gemara has to make a distinction. And the Gemara says, apparently, it's only a problem if it's kaviya. If it's kaviya, then on top of then higher than 10 tefachim is a problem. If it's not kaviya, okay, then apparently that's a chiddush Shmuel. Even higher than 10 tefachim is not a problem. Okay, so let's try to sort this out in our minds. So what is problematic and what's not problematic? So you have two types of beds. Roof beds, canopy beds, and beds that have some sort of canopy, but there's no roof to it. So when is it a problem, and when is it not a problem? So we're trying to sort all of this out. It's complicated. There are a few variables we have to deal with. Is there significance to the roof, to the gag part of it? It seems like it's really not significant. Because we saw that the whole issue is the kvius. Once it's kvia, it sounds like it's a problem. The discrepancy between what we learned before and what we're learning now is that before we thought there's kvia plus roof. It sounded like if you have a roof, then under 10 tefachim is only a problem if it's kaviya. But if it's not kaviya, then we don't really care about the roof because it's not high enough to be a problem. 10 tefachim is a high problem, but less than 10 tefachim is not a problem. That's what we thought. Yeah? When we see this Gemara, suddenly there's something called a kinoif that is a problem higher than 10 tefachim because it doesn't have a gag. So what's the problem? What could possibly be the problem? So the answer is higher than 10 tvachim. Higher than 10 tvachim is a separate domain. So that's what we thought. The two issues here. There's gag, and then there's 10 tvachim. If it is a gag, then it's a problem if it's kaviya. If there's no gag, then it's only a problem if it's higher than 10 tvachim. Sounds, you know, like that, we're good to go. Comes along Shmuel with his kilas chasanim, and says even higher than 10 tvachim is fine, because there's no gag. I thought we had this worked out! So Gemara says, okay, we have to make a further distinction here. Apparently, also Akila is only problematic higher than 10 if it's Kaviya. And the Kila's Chasanim is to take apart a bowl. It's not significant enough in the structure. Big Chiddush, we didn't know that before. But now the Gemara has a problem. Because then where does the distinction lie between the Kinoifois and the Kila now? Because if you're going to make a clear distinction between gag and then no gag, gag is a problem, only kaviya. No gag, only problem higher than 10 tvachim. But now kaviya seems to matter for both of them. So we don't see the rhyme and reason anymore. So Gemara says, let a kila be just like a kinoif. If the whole issue is how fixed it is, so then it should be a problem when it's less than 10 tvachim. Right? No.
Why? Because you want to close the permanent?
What we want to do is we want to distinguish between when it has a roof and when there's no roof. That's what we want to do. And it seems pretty clear when you do it like that, right? If it has a roof, then it's less than 10 tefachim high roof. What is that? The answer is it's not significant. Unless it's a fixed structure, in which case, okay, we'll say, we'll call it a tent. But if you have a four-post bed, and the posts don't go up very high, they go up less than 10 tefachim, and you spread the sheet upon top of them, it's not a tent, it's nothing. But if it's a permanent structure like that, okay, so then we'll have to view it as a tent, even though it's less than 10 tefachim high. That's what we said. So the kvius is of great significance, less than 10 tefachim. If you have a type of bed that only has two posts, it doesn't really have a roof at all, so then that's nothing, right? We thought it was nothing ever. That seems what Shmuel is saying. But the Gemara says, no. It's a problem with more than 10 tefachim. Because more than 10 tefachim is like a separate rishus. You can't ignore 10 tefachim. It's 10 tefachim. That's a mechitza, you know. It's 10 tefachim. Okay, so we thought that was it. We're done. If you have a roof, then if it's kaviya, roof plus kaviya, problem. If there's no roof, So then 10 tefachim is a problem. Less than 10 tefachim, no problem. Now the Gemara says, no. That if it's... What? What does the Gemara say? That if it's 10 tefachim high, and there's no gag, Shmuel says it's still fine. But that's not what we said. I thought we said, Akila, which has no roof, once you hit the 10 tefachim barrier, it's a problem. How do you account for that discrepancy? So what's the Gemara's answer? There are two types of kila. There's a kila, and kila's chasan. A kila is a problem once you hit 10 tefachim, and a kila's chasan apparently is not. What could possibly account for that discrepancy? So our answer is kavua. How kavua it is. Kila's chasan is not kavua, so even more than 10 tefachim is fine.
And
regular kila is kavia, and therefore it's a problem once you hit 10 tefachim.
Even a regular kila above 10 tefachim would be a problem. That's really what this problem.
Regular kila above 10 tefachim is a problem because it's kavia, says the Gemara. So Gemara says, okay, once you bring in the concept of being kavia being problematic, then why shouldn't it be a problem less than 10 tefachim?
We have a regular kila.
Just like the kinoif. The kinoif is a roof. And less than 10 tefachim is a problem because it's a tent. I mean, you can't ignore it. It's a permanent structure. So then how do you differentiate between that and the kila now? Because the kila is, again, a permanent structure. You're right, it doesn't have a roof, but it's a tent. So that's the first question. Where does this distinction lie? If kvius is the factor, so it should be a kvia problem, less than 10 tefachim. So I was going to say it. So it says... So Gemara says the last two words in line. You see where it says Shani Naklitin? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. About, I don't know, 12 lines down or so. The last two words are Shani Naklitin. Shani Naklitin. Naklitin are different. Naklitin is the four posts. Sorry, Naklitin is the two posts. The Kaviye, because they're Kavua. So they're a problem over 10 Tvachim. If they're kaviyeh lihavi kikinoifois, then they should be like kinoifois. What's the Ragamara saying? So that's what I'm trying to explain. And what he's trying to say, so then it should be a problem less than 10 tefachim. Just like a kinoif is a problem less than 10 tefachim, because it's a fixed tent. Where is the distinction lie? So the answers. Lagabe kinoifois, if you're going vis-a-vis, regarding, if you're going to compare a kila to kinoifois, sorry, naklitin. You're going to compare naklitin to kinoifes. So then, loy kaviyeh. Naklitin are not as kaviyeh as kinoifes. Kila, kaviyeh. But vis-a-vis akila, or at least akila's chasanim, so then they are certainly kaviyeh. So what is that supposed to mean at the end of the day? At the end of the day, the Gemara is saying that what's considered to be fixed is relative, and there are different levels of what it means, a permanent structure. The Gemara doesn't explain it to us, so, you know, unless you're going to go have a history lesson at a place like the Living Torah Museum where he may have some of these structures left. He doesn't, as far as I'm aware. You guys ever been there in Brooklyn, the Living Torah Museum? We should do that. We should really do that one day. Okay, remind me. That's a field trip we should go on. It's called the Living Torah Museum. It's really cool.
Oh, I've been there before.
Yeah?
I've been there before. It's pretty crazy.
He's got really cool stuff.
It's like a stone that, like, you have to...
He's got ancient artifacts. I mean, ancient stuff, and he lets you hold it, and like, it's really cool. Anyway, remind me. Maybe you should try to do that one day. But in any case, so there's a permanence to the kinoifes that's not as permanent. The naklitin are not as permanent, and the kila is like even less. Mom is pull apart. It's like it doesn't. It's very flimsy, something like that. So that's what our finish is saying. So we're back to our basic original distinctions. So if you have something that has a canopy, that has a fixed roof, less than 10 tefachim is a problem. If it's a roof, but it's not really fixed, so then it's okay until you get to 10 tefachim. Once you hit 10 tefach, so then you've got a problem unless it's really, really not fixed at all. If it's really not fixed at all, then you could theoretically have it even over 10 tefachim. That's what Shmuel calls a kilas chasan.
That's another thing. If you have a structure, if you have a roof, that's for sure showing permanence. And there's no roof.
Then if the structure is...
I don't understand that. It's supposed to be a temporary structure, right? So if there's a structure within a temporary structure, shouldn't that also...
In a certain way, that makes it worse, right? because it's so temporary, so whatever's inside of it, if it's a real permanent type of thing, that'll really invalidate. You're not in a sukkah anymore.
Right.
In a certain sense, if you have a sukkah in your house, like, you know, I'm not in a tent in your house. You're in a house. Come on, you know. But you have to be in a sukkah.
No, it's actually, but that's a temporary structure within a permanent structure. Basically saying that the temporary structure is basically permanent.
So the more temporary it is, the better off you are.
But you have a temporary structure, you have a permanent structure within it.
It means to say you're in a once you're in a permanent structure in a sukkah, so you're not in a sukkah anymore. Because the sukkah is so temporary, that really pushes in that direction. So the what's gonna be mutter is the more flimsy, the more temporary structure you're in your sukkah. It's better for you.
Yeah. What makes it like permanent? What makes it a sukkah though is the schaf. The wall of the high tefillah and not doing anything as a sukkah. And I know sukkah is like a special mitzvah, right? It's its own thing. When it comes to this point, if I have something higher than, maybe if you want to draw the same conclusion that the roof is what makes it or shows a level of permanence, even inside being temporary.
Yeah, but at the same time, apparently you can have something that's not klitin, where there's no real gag, but it's higher than 10 tefachim. And that's a problem.
You're saying it exacerbates the problem because
the more permanent it is, the worse it is.
The more permanent it is, the worse it is.
Okay, so let's go weiter. Darash Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Mutter Lishan Bekila. When it's allowed to sleep in a kila, Afal Pisha Yeshla Gag. Okay, this is apparently a unique type of kila that actually does have a roof. Afal Pisha Gavoya Sara, and it's even 10 tefachim high. What? Come on. Who holds that way? It's got a roof, and it's 10 tefachim high, and he's still allowed to sleep in it? How could that be? Come on. Kirib Yehuda. That's like Rabbi Yehuda. So you ready for this? To Omar, loy asi oyal arai. You can't have a temporary tent. Come, asi is to come. Loy asi doesn't come, oyal arai, a temporary tent. Umvatel and nullify oyal keva. A tent that's really fixed. So, Adam, that's really your point. That the sukkah, vis-a-vis anything you're going to be in a sukkah sounds like, come on, this is the sukkah. The sukkah's always going to be more permanent than whatever you're in because you're sleeping in it. You're not, but you're going to take it out and bring the table in, you know? So that's what Rabbi Yehuda actually says. It's not Rabbi Yehuda. No, again, hayinu lishan tachas amita b'fnei hazakeinim. Because Rabbi Yehuda, first of all, we don't know this Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Gemara is assuming it. Gemara says, I'll prove it to you. Because Rabbi Yehuda is the one that said, we used to, no, again, hayinu, our custom used to be, lishan to sleep, tachas hamita, under the bed, b'fnei hazakeinim. In the face of the elders. In other words, apparently they used to have a sukkah. Everybody would sleep in it at night. It was a pretty big sukkah. So the Rabbanim were there and the Talmidim were there. There wasn't enough room in the sukkah. How big was the sukkah? It wasn't that big. So where did the Talmidim sleep? On the lower level. The upper level of GWB and the lower level of GWB. Under the beds. Plenty of room under the beds. Under the beds. You can't sleep under the bed. Doesn't that invalidate the whole your whole sleeping in the sukkah? You're under a bed, not in a sukkah. So the Gemara assumes that Rabbi Yehuda, that's the source for his whole halacha, is that because it's a bed, it's not a real structure. You're in a sukkah. You can't have an oil arai, a bed, which is a temporary tent. No one lives in there. Maybe you'll sleep in there a few hours, that's it. That can't be mevatel, your yeshiva's sukkah. Okay, so Gemara says, well, if that's true, v'leima halachik Rabbi Yehuda, why don't you just say, Rabbi Yehuda said, in the olden days we used to sleep under the beds in front of the zakenim and they never said a word to us, obviously it's okay. So then you should have said, and that's the halacha. And that's halacha. Why do you have to say, oh, well, it's mutter to sleep in a kila and a sukkah, even if there's a gog, and even if it's higher than 10 tefachim? That's a lot of words. Why don't you just quote me what Rabbi Yehuda said about sleeping under the beds and say two words, v'chein halacha. That's the din. And then we'll know that if you have a kila that has a gag and a tentor chai, we'll know it's fine. So in other words, this is a function of the Gemara's principle. We always try to teach things in the most concise way. So we don't need a lot of different passages in the Masorah to say the same thing. It gets confusing. We want our Masorah to be as short, clear and concise as possible. So if you're going to tell me a halacha that you're allowed to sleep in a kila that has a gag, in a sukkah, even though it's higher than 10 tefachim, don't give me that case, please. That's a specific case. That gets confusing. Just tell me the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, who holds you can sleep under a bed in a sukkah. because that gives me a lot more applications than your specific example of the kila. Just tell me the flat out halachas like Rabbi Yehuda, and we'll know a lot more cases than your particular case of the kila. You with me? So why don't you just tell me v'chein halacha? Two words, and that's the halacha. Why do you have to give me this whole case and say, oh, that's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? Do you hear the question a little bit? No? Check explain it again. Are we good? That's Gemara's question. Gemara says you can't do that. E Omar, if he would say halacha ke Rabbi Yehuda, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, allowed to sleep under a bed. Hava amina, I would have thought. Hanilei, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. These words, the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. Mita, when we're talking about a bed, that's the case. Rabbi Yehuda, we used to sleep under the beds in front of the Zakenim. I would think that only applies by a bed. Okay, stop for a minute. Why? Why in the world? Why would you think that you only apply by a bed? You're allowed to sleep under a bed, but about a kila? No, that's different. Why? What's the difference? The principle is that this is a bed. It's not really a significant structure. Why would you think it only applies to a bed and not to like any other tent? What's the difference between sleeping under a bed and sleeping in a tent? Is the bed made to sleep under it?
No.
I would have thought, honey milimita, that even if you would have told me halachas like Rabbi Yehuda, I would have thought maybe Rabbi Yehuda limits that to sleeping under a bed. Dilegabo asuya. What's legabo? You know what a gav is?
Bad.
A bed. Legabo asuya. That it's meant, it's made for the top, for the back. Avakila, but akila dilesocha asuya, which is made for the inside, it's supposed to be covered by that. I would have said, no, that doesn't work. Kamash Malan comes to teach us time of the Rabbi Yehuda, the rationale for Rabbi Yehuda that you have to sleep under a bed, that a temporary tent cannot come and nullify a permanent tent. It doesn't make a difference if it's a bed. It doesn't make a difference if it's a kila. So that's why we needed to spell out the case of the kila. Because had it been the case of the bed, we would not have known the case of the kila. Why? Why not? Because if you tell me you're allowed to sleep under a bed in a sukkah, I would have thought the reason is because it's not really a tent. Because it's not meant for anybody to sleep under it. It's meant to sleep on top of it. It just raises it up from the floor. That's not called a tent. Kamash Malan. No. The same principles that work over here. The reason why you're allowed to sleep under a bed is considered a tent because at the end of the day, it's a structure and it covers something. And then, you know, in Tum of Atara, if there's a dead body under that bed, it would spread the Tum of Atara wherever the bed goes. It's an oyel, it's a tent. So same thing applies over here. Okay, that's the end of that sugya. Now the Gemara is going to change a little bit. We can relax a little bit. Not as confusing enough to hold cup as much with all those tentvachim and kviya, whatever. Starting a new section. Mishnah. Hidla leas agavim es adlas. Do you remember this case? Hidla means, it's a tough word to translate literally, but it means to throw on top. So a person threw on top his sukkah, on top of his schach, gefen. What's gefen? Does it mean grapes or means vine? Anyone think it means grapes? You're on target. Pre-hagefen. So, wait, why is it gefen? It's gefen. Gefen?
It's definitely
gefen. Why is it gefen? Mashi v'orach morida.
Geshen.
Geshen? Geshen? Okay, guys, what's going on here? You guys ever heard of a segalit?
Everyone says it different.
Segalit? We'll put the rationale behind it.
There's definitely grammar.
Ooh! Shul, you get ready for this? Okay, so you guys, maybe you saw the parsha sheets. If you saw them floating around, there are questions for the kids to answer. Get in on a raffle, right? Yeah, answers get two tickets. Two tickets, we're all six, right? What are the names of the three sons of Noah? You guys all know, tell me. Shame, Cham, and... Raise your hand if it's Yafes. Raise your hand if it's Yafes. His real name is Yafes, guys. His real name is Yafes. Why is he called Yafes? Why is he called Yafes? Okay, you ready? Whenever you have a word that has a double segel, like what?
Yafes.
Geshem. Gefen. When you're on a mesachta, when you're on a pause, a comma, or a sof pasuk, or the end of a pasuk, the first segel becomes a kamas.
So it's really bari pri hagafen.
So that's why Ashkenazim are right, and we say bari pri hagafen, right? And that's why, well, Mashiv Ruach Marid HaGeshem is complicated because it depends if it's a period or if it's a run-on sentence that goes on to the next one. So depending on how you look at that, that'll change it. Yeah, it's called a pausal. Whenever you have a double, whenever you have a segalit, that's the likely call. They call it a segalit. Whenever you have a segalit, a double segal, that's at a pause. So the first segal becomes a komatz. That's a rule in Chumash, biblical Hebrew. Now, I don't think anybody in modern-day Hebrew speak like that. That's not a rule for modern-day Hebrew, but it certainly is a biblical Hebrew principle. So we follow that when we daven and when we make brachas and whatnot. It follows those principles. So that's why Ashkenazim say Bari Pri HaGofen and Tehmanim say Bari Jiffin. There's a dagesh in the Gimel. Is that Jiffin? A Jiffin. But in any case, so Geffen is the vine. It's not the wine. Bari Pri HaGofen is the fruit of the vine. Why am I saying that? Because if you go ahead and you put grapes as part of your schach, someone finished the sentence. What's wrong with using grapes for your schach? Is that okay?
Or grapes is said that fruit can't be, is not part of the schach.
Why not? What's wrong? What's wrong?
Because it could be adding the height. It
could be decoration. Why can't you use it as part of your schach?
It could be adding as a height.
Okay, but so what? That's okay, right?
Well, no, if you're so concerned.
That's only if it's a, that's a very specific time. But what about in general?
Wasn't that what the case of with the servant and his t-shirt?
He didn't want him to put it on. He didn't want him to put it on. Why?
Because it was
too high?
It was adding.
No, that's not why.
It
was
adding more.
Why? The shirt was just drying. Oh, okay. So you won't. So it's muksa. Okay, nunu. Come on. What does schach have to be made out of? It can't be attached to the ground. It also can't be what? Anybody remember? What was the example? You can't. No one remembers. Okay, I'll tell you. Makabel tumah. Can't be makabel tumah. That was the problem with the shirt. The shirt was that it's a kli. It's makabel tumah. So you can't be masachet with things makabel tumah. How do you know that? So Rashi over here, Rashi claims, well, he doesn't actually spell this one out, actually. But it's based on that you have to use for schach things that are your harvested stuff, garnacha mikvecha, that has to be not fruit, can't be makabel tumah. Okay, whatever the source is. So you can't be masach themselves makabel tumah. So you have to use the grape vine. You can't actually use the grapes themselves. And what's delas? Some kind of gourds or, I don't know, squash, something like that. Again, it doesn't mean here the word is the gourd, but it's not what it means. The Mishnah does not refer to being masachik with the actual fruit, because that you're not allowed to do. So how do we have to interpret the Mishnah? You have to add a word. You're not allowed to be masachik with the vine that produces the gourd or squash or whatever it is. It's a kisus, again, some other kind of vine or something like that. So all this Mishnah is addressing is not fruit. The Mishnah cares about the fact that all of these various vines that you're putting on top of your schach are attached to the ground. That's the problem. So if a person took them, they're still attached to the ground, and hidle, put them on top of his schach, v'sichich al gabo, and he put schach on top of it, psula, it's puzzle. V'im hayasichich harbe mehen, but if the kosher schach is more, is the majority, than the vines, or you should cut sitzan, or you cut off the vines from the ground, kshera, then it's kosher. Zaklau, this is the rule. Kolshu makabel tuma, whatever is susceptible can receive tuma. Ve'en gidulei min ha'aretz, and does not grow from the ground, meaning, or it doesn't grow from the ground. Ein masachech en boy, you're not allowed to be masachech with it. Ve'chol davar, in anything, she'ena makabel tuma, it does not receive tuma. Ve'gidulei min ha'aretz, and does grow from the ground, masachech en boy, you can use for schach. Okay. So the Mishnah mentions the Tumah idea, maybe because it wants to throw it in, because it's dealing with vines that have fruit sometimes on it. But the essential point of the Mishnah is that you're not allowed to use vines for schach if they're still attached to the ground. Good? Pashut. Says the Gemara. Yasiv. What's Yasiv mean?
Chiena.
Yosef, Aramaic, Yosef, Yud, Saf, Yud, Vez. Would be translated to Hebrew, would be what? Yeah, why? Yeah, remember?
You got it. Because in Aramaic,
shave. So the shin and the saf switch around in Aramaic a lot. So that's what's going on. Yoshiv, Rav Yosef, kamei de Rav Huna. Rav Yosef was sitting in front of Rav Huna. Do you guys remember Rav Yosef? What was unique about Rav Yosef? Anybody know? He was blind. Rav Yosef was blind. But that's not significant for us. Rav Yosef was sitting in front of Rav Huna. V'yosef, and he was sitting v'komer, and he said, Oishikatz etzan k'sheira. I guess he likes quoting Mishnayos. I don't know. Whatever was going on over there. So he pointed out this halacha, that if you cut off the vines, it's kasher. V'omar Rav, and Rav Yosef added, Rav said, tzarech l'naneya. You know what that means? Naneya? Nanuim, by your lulav. What's nanuim? Naneya? To shake. Tzarech l'naneya. You have to shake them. What is he talking about? Does anybody know? Apparently, if all you do is cut off the vines from the ground, that's a problem. We'll have to see exactly why. But it's a problem because when you put them on as schach, they were still attached to the ground. So when you cut them off, you cut them off after you already used them for schach. So you have to put them on again. But you don't have to take them all the way off and put them all the way on again. It's enough to... what? Shake them. Shake them. Bimenaneya. Why? What's the chat? So it's like you're putting it on again. It's enough. You shake it. You took it off, put it back on. Yeah? So again, what's the problem? The problem is, you used for schach, a vine is no good. It's attached to the ground. So what? Cut it off. So according to the Mishnah, it sounds like that's all you have to do. Says Rav Yosef, Rav said, no, you're not allowed to do that. After you cut it off from the ground, you have to shake it. You have to take it off and put it back on. Because you have to put it on as schach when it's kosher for schach. If you put it on when it was no good for schach, then you're going to have to fix the problem. But it's not enough to just cut it at that point. If it's already on, you have to shake it after you cut it off. Okay, so that's what Rav Yosef said in the name of Rav. And he was sitting in front of Rav Huna. Amar le Rav Huna. Rav Huna said back to Rav Yosef, Hashmuel Amra! That wasn't Rav. That was Shmuel. Okay, I'm sorry. I mean, that's a pretty big mistake. You don't want to quote the wrong person. But is that a logical problem? Ahadurinu Rav Yosef la'ape. Rav Yosef turned back to his face, or sent it back in his face. V'omar le'ed, he said to Rav Huna, Atumika aminalach deloyam Rashmuel. Who was saying to you that Shmuel didn't say it? Amr Rav, Amr Shmuel. Rav said it and Shmuel did too. By the way, who was older? Rav or Shmuel? Rav. Rav, we have a principal, Rav Tanahu Polig. Sometimes Rav disagrees with Tanoim because he was like, in between. He learned from Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel, they were contemporaries, but I think Rav was a little older. Okay, in any case, Amar Le Rav Huna. Rav Huna said back to him, this sounds like a real fight over here, huh? This is what I'm trying to tell you. The Shmuel Amravaloi Rav. No, Shmuel said it because Rav didn't. I'm not trying to say, it has to be only Shmuel, not Rav. No, I'm telling you that you're wrong. Rav didn't say that. How do you know that? The Rav Achshuri Machshir, because Rav would surely say it's kasher to just cut it without shaking it. How do you know that? So he tries to prove it. So this is Rav Huna trying to prove to Rav Yosef that Rav holds, all you need to do is cut it off, you do not have to shake it. Ki ha, the Rav Amram Chasida. Ooh, Rav Amram Chasida. You guys know the story of Rav Amram Chasida, right? Everyone knows the story of Rav Amram Chasida, right? No? The captive girls?
Who?
The captive girls? Oh, man. Okay, so there was a whole bunch of women. Not clear they were married, weren't married, I don't know. But whatever it is, sounds like maybe there were a bunch of single girls even. There were a bunch of girls who were captured. And the Jewish community, Baruch Hashem, was able to ransom them away from the captors. But they were very far from home. So they needed to get them back to their respective homes, or maybe they all came from a village, I don't know. But they needed to get them back home. So they went, on the way back, they had to spend the night in whatever town Rav Amram Chasida lived in. And he had a barn that had a loft. So they said, what a great place to keep them, not just because it's a nice private area in the loft, but because the only way to get to the loft is this huge, heavy ladder, and it took 10 people to lift. That's what the Gemara says. So what we'll do is, we'll get them there, we'll move this ladder, and they will be mamish, be able to just sleep for the night. Because you can imagine, I mean, we don't know what happened to these poor girls, but they were captured. And they were with these guys forever long. They were captured and ransomed out. They were probably, you know, they were probably very, very emotional. So you can imagine the great opportunity for a guy to go to one of these girls and calm her down. One of these nasty guys wants to take advantage of one of these girls, is probably a great opportunity, right? So they wanted them to be in a safe place so no one would bother them. So that's what they did. Perfect. Lof, Ramam, Chasida, ladder, 10 people to move, safe, move the ladder, everyone go to sleep. In the middle of the night, Ramam Chasida sees this, what our Gemara describes, a light shining down from the loft. He has a sense that there's some connection here with one of these women. Ramam Chasida, he's called a chassid. How many Rabbanim in the Gemara do you know that are called a chassid? Not many. So, you know what he does? He goes to the barn, he picks up the ladder himself, and it takes 10 men to lift. You know those stories? Like these women, they have like their baby Rachman Litzan has gone into the car, and they lift up the car by themselves. You know, you've heard these stories. Maisa Shaya. So he lifts up this ladder, he takes it over to the opening to the loft, and he starts climbing up. Halfway up the ladder, Rav Amram Chasida, the gadol ador, the gadol of the town, starts screaming, "Fire! Fire! Fire! Nura Bey Amram! Nura Bey Amram! There's a fire in Amram's house." So you know what happened back then, right? Everyone comes running with their pails of water. Yeah? Everyone comes running with their pails of water. They walk into the barn. There's no smoke. There's no fire. There's just Rav Amram Chasida halfway up the ladder. And they are humiliated. "Amram, you embarrassed us." He says, "Better you be embarrassed of me here than in the next world. Thank you for saving me." That's the story of the war. It's a crazy story. Why did he just get off the ladder?
Wait, he was going to call fire on
yeah.
the ladder?
That's how he stopped himself from climbing up to the loft.
Why didn't he want to climb up to the loft?
He had a sense, it's a spiritual taiva. He had some kind of taiva, I don't know if we can even relate to it, but he had some kind of taiva that was like pulling him. He knew that there's something that he had to be with one of those women. The light that shined from around his face. It was the Yetzirah.
So he didn't end up singing.
So he climbed up, he moved the ladder, took 10 men to lift, and he had to stop himself by screaming, "Nura Bayamra." So the lesson for us is that sometimes we have taiva, we have a Yetzirah, that we can't just stop doing it. So what do? You make sure you're in public. You make sure that the computer is in the living room. You make sure that we never do certain things unless it's in public, because we won't do things in public that you would do in private. But that's Rav Amram Chasida. Wow. Anyway, Ki Hazar Rav Amram Chasida. What's the point of the Gemara? The point of the Gemara is not the stories I'm trying to tell you. The point of the Gemara is that Rav Huna said, "I'm going to prove to you that Rav holds all you have to do is cut off the vines, and that's good enough." Rav Amram Chasida, Rama Techilta la Prezuma de Inche Beise. He was putting Techeles, which in the Gemara doesn't only mean Techeles, it means Tzitzis. But Tzitzis are referred to as Techeles because that's one of the main reasons that we wear tzitzis, urisem oso, so you can see them, which really refers to the techeles. This is how it ties into hilchos tzitzis, so hopefully we'll get there. I don't know if we're going to do it today, but Rav Chasida was putting techeles in the clothing, the parzuma, the four-corner garments, the inche beise, of the people of his house. Tala an, vele posak, roshe chutin shalahan. He strung them, litlos is to hang, right? So he hung them, velo pasak, and he didn't cut the heads of the strings of them. So what's the case? The case was, he took one string, folded it four times, so now there are four strings, but it's all one string, put it through the hole, and then he was going to cut it into four strings. Or it's not clear for the Gemara if he tied the knots yet or didn't tie the knots yet. But for our purposes, it's irrelevant. The point is, when he put the string in, it was one. He cut it into four strings after. That's the parallel to our case. You put the schach on, and you cut it afterwards. What's the problem? So the problem is what's called tasev lomino asui. That when you put the thing in for the mitzvah, you have to put it in a way where you can do the mitzvah. You can't have, done the mitzvah, and then afterwards, "Oh, look, there's tzitzis now." When you put the strings in, you got to put four strings in. You can't put one string in and cut it later. Or can you? I don't know. Asa l'kami de Rav Chiya Barashi. So he went to ask a shayla in front of Chiya Barashi. Am I allowed to do this? Is this okay? Are the tzitzis kosher? Amar lei, hachi amar Rav. Rechia bar Ashi told him, I'll tell you what I heard in the name of Rav. Mafsikan vein kshirin. Cut them, and they are kosher. Oh, Alma, you see from here, psikasan, the cutting of them, zuhi asiyasan, is making them. So the idea is that when you cut them, that's when you're actually making them. So too, just like the tzitzis, all you need to do is cut them, and you're good to go. So too with the schach. When you cut them, you're putting on the schach. The cutting them is the putting on the schach, because that's the last thing you need to do, is just cut it off on the ground. So you didn't put it on as schach puzzle. You put it on because you're going to cut it. So Rav would say, you don't have to be menaneya. It's enough to cut it. Visavar Shmuel, and Shmuel thought, lo amrinon psikasan zu asiyasan, that Shmuel disagreed. Shmuel, the reason why Shmuel said you have to be menaneya is because he held that that's not called the asiyah. That's called schach puzzle. You were mesachech with schach puzzle because it was connected to the ground. It doesn't become schach when you cut it. It's schach puzzle. So now you have to be menaneya, you have to put it on properly. Really? V'hatani Shmuel. But Shmuel taught Mishum Rabbi Chiya in the name of Rabbi Chiya. If you put into two corners at one time, and only afterwards you cut off the heads of the strings, ksherin, it's kosher. What's the case? The case is we have a tzitzis garment, a four-corner garment. So you take two corners, and you put the four tzitzis through two corners at the same time. And then he cut them. So now he has eight strings. But beforehand, he didn't have enough. He only had four or whatever. I guess he had four. So it's the same case that we said before. No, I think he's a rab. So, and Shmuel said, cut them and you're good. My love should kosher v'char kach poseg. Isn't the case where he tied the tzitzis and then he cut them so they would be kosher? Why? No. Shal poseg v'char kach kosher. That particular case was when he cut the string first and then he tied them. So he did put four strings into each one. And then he cut them and then he tied them. The only problem would be if he put four strings in and tied them like that and then cut them so it would become eight. And I can't picture how you do that. But I guess there's a way. So that would be a problem. Poisek v'achar kach kosher maila memra. Wait. If the case is that he put four strings through two corners, cut the strings in half, and then tied two separate tzitzis, Maila Memra, what are you trying to say? What's the chiddush? He put four strings in each corner, and he tied them. Like what could possibly have been the problem that Shmuel needs to say, oh, that's kosher? Maila would say, well, what is there to say? I would have thought. Ba'inan knaf bishas psil leleka. That because the Torah says, that you have to put the strings into each corner on its own. I would have thought you have to put four strings into each corner on its own. But lekan, you don't have that because you put them into two corners simultaneously. Kamash malan, that is not a problem. Kamash malan, it's not a problem. Yeah? Okay, that's the Gemara. We're going to stop on the Gemara for there. Any questions on the Gemara? So, at the end of the day, what happened? What happened is that Rabbi Yosef said, Rav says that you have to be menaneya after you cut off the vines. And Rav Huna got all mad at him and said, Shmuel said that, not Rav. And so Rabbi Yosef didn't understand. He's like, yeah, so why can't it be both Rav and Shmuel? Shmuel came later. What's their problem? He said, no. Shmuel doesn't agree with that. You're wrong. That is the opinion of Shmuel and not the opinion of Rav. How do you know that? Because there was a case in Ma'aseh Shehaya where Rav Amram Chasida, so he actually put one string that was folded over four times into a corner of his garments of the people of his house, and then he cut them off afterwards. And he went in front of Chibur Rashi, and he asked a Shaila, and Rav apparently had, so Rav told, Rav had taught that once you cut them, you're good. It's not a problem after that. So same thing over here. And the Gemara asks the Kasha, Shmuel also, no, Shmuel didn't agree with that. Shmuel holds that you have to, that you can't just cut them. That's not good enough. You have to actually put them back in the tzitzis, into the hole, into the corner again. And that accounts for the machlokas here also. It's to be a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel. If you go ahead and you put vines on your schach and you cut them off only afterwards, so do you have to be minaneya or not? Shmuel says no. Shmuel says yes. And Rav, just like by tzitzis, would say no. Good? Okay, so just take a breath for 2 minutes. Text your mothers or something. And in 2 minutes, we'll learn halacha for like 10 minutes. But mom, it's just like two-minute break.